हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, verse 9. In his purport to the verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals that Duryodhana actually confirms that Lord Krishna says, we did verse 9. Okay. Verse 10. Srila Prabhupada and Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan translate the word aparyaptam as immeasurable. The strength of the Kaurava's army is immeasurable because of Bhishma's protection. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur translates aparyaptam as insignificant. In this case, the meaning is, our strength is insignificant because of attachment for the Pandavas. Bhishma is not fully committed to the battle. Therefore, we depend on Drona for the outcome of the fight. Thus, with a single word, Duryodhana managed to encourage both Bhishma and Drona. Although the Kaurava army looked superior in number and quality, Duryodhana had several reasons to be concerned. According to Duryodhana's calculation, the Kauravas had only 7 powerful warriors against 17 Maharathas from the Pandava side. The main Kaurava heroes, Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa, favored the Pandavas and were thus divided in their allegiance. Bhishma in particular had announced that he would not kill the Pandavas. Karna was completely devoted to Duryodhana, but he vowed not to fight while Bhishma is present on the battlefield. Besides this, he promised to Kunti he would not slay the Pandavas except for Arjuna. Another consideration was that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, took the side of the Pandavas. It was obvious that the pious Kaurava leaders, Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa, will be hesitant to attack him. So Duryodhana has all, you know, facility here. So much volume he has, greater volume, and of army and all that. But at the same time, as then he's looking at all these considerations, and these considerations we see are based on piety, are based on relationship. So even though he has force, he is worried about whether that force will actually be that efficient because of, you know, proper pious relationships, proper God-conscious relationships. At the same time, he also has the elements of, it's relationships, just in the negative and positive, because then we have a problem here is that Karna won't cooperate with Bhishma, even though Bhishma is a greater warrior like that. But we have to remember, Bhishma was defeating Parasaram. Right? But because of the situation, then the demigods, you know, encouraged him that he should, you know, give up the fight and surrender. But otherwise, Bhishma was defeating Parasaram. So his prowess is something very, very special. And so Karna, in his, you know, pride, is somehow or another come in conflict with Bhishma. And so he won't fight as long as Bhishma is fighting. You know, it's like it's him or me, one of these kind of stupidities. But the whole point is cooperation is the thing. That's why the Pandava side is strong. Because they're God conscious, they're following religion, and they cooperate. Right? So this makes them strong. While with Duryodhana's side, then God consciousness isn't the principle. They're not necessarily cooperating with him. They won't cooperate with each other necessarily so well because of ego. Right? And it's not the whole, their whole position is not based on Dharma. Right? Their position is based on Niti. So Niti is always going to be less than Dharma. Right? In one sense, seemingly initially more efficient, right? Because Niti is, you know, wipe out everything right now, you won't have problems later. But means later means I won't have problems that, okay, if I kill all the Pandavas and everyone related to them, I won't have any problems with the Pandavas giving me trouble in the future. So it appears to be very efficient. It seems to be long term. But what's not taken into consideration is Dharma. If you're doing something that's not proper, even though you're getting the result now, it will not last because it's against the religious principles. So the religious principles, then it will be reversed on you later. So when you are in a good position and all that, it will be removed from you by others who are using that form of niti. So those who know Dharma then don't see the advantage. I might get something now, I'll lose everything later. What's the benefit? So those in Niti don't have that broad enough vision to see Dharma, so then they don't mind it. They think it's great. So the idea is that the scriptures are written that each level of consciousness in itself is complete. At the same time as the higher the level of consciousness, the bigger the picture you see. So it's only when, because everything has come from God, everything is complete in itself. But at the same time as those who know God, then they know the bigger completeness. Right? In other words, if you know Krishna, you know the absolute completeness. But if you only know a particular area, it's complete in itself. And so it will work on that level. But it won't go beyond. Right? Niti, one can only see that benefits that you want to get. That's all you can see. You can't see beyond. So Niti will work in that field very efficiently. But it won't work beyond that. Does that make sense? You won't get benefit beyond that. Right? And this sense gratification, the shastras that deal with the senses, you will get benefit on the sensual platform. But you won't get beyond that. Does that make sense? You're dealing with the sensual platform, so what is pious within the central sensual context? You know, in other words, piety meaning what is according to the nature of sense gratification, how sense gratification will work properly, then you get that benefit, but you won't get artha from it, you won't get dharma from it, you won't get moksha from it. Right? It'll be pious. So in one sense, you're purified, but that purification is very, very slow. It's a very slow path. And because of attachment, there's any chance that becoming attached to properly performed sense gratification, then in situations where it doesn't come very easily, that austerity will be required, that will be announced by a higher form. Like the Niti or the Dharma will express that. You won't be able to control yourself. You will still try to get that level of sense gratification that you're accustomed to. So then that means you'll have to go against the dharma of sense gratification. So then it will be impious. So then the system will break down. Right? Because dharma takes into consideration the nature of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Of all of it. So if you situate yourself in dharma, then you can deal with everything. But you situate yourself in one of the other places, then that will be very difficult. So dharma is the central position. Does that make sense? From dharma, you get artha and kama. Right? From dharma, you can work with moksha and... Does that make sense? So it's the central position. Because you're actually addressing the nature of something. Because dharma does explain moksha. Right? It does explain devotional service. Right, that there's something beyond. It doesn't get into detail about devotional service. It just explains that this is important. Right? Moksha will explain. But it's explaining what is the nature of moksha. Right? So therefore you understand. Otherwise you work just within the realm of moksha, then you can't, you yourself are working with it. Moksha is based on the nature of the soul. But the problem is that since you have a body, you know, and the conditioning that goes with the body, that has to be considered. Moksha may not consider that. Does that make sense? Because it's only dealing with the principle of moksha. So dharma can deal with that. So this means that this is the important position to be situated in. That's why he's worried, Dhritarashtra, about the effects of the holy place on the outcome of the battle, because dharma is the one that actually gives results. Dhritarashtra knows this. You know, he's properly trained, but due to attachment, he's not taking advantage of it, and he's functioning, therefore, on the platform of niti. And hoping that the Pandavas, functioning on the platform of dharma, will think, why we should fight, we'll just go to the forest. You know, which one could say is, you could say that would be the more religious platform. But at the same time, is there Kshatriyas? Why would Kshatriyas not have a battle? Right? If there was a proper religious battle, why would they avoid it? So that's a consideration he's not taking into there. It's through the weakness of heart that Arjuna is taking up this other situation. Right? It's not his dharma. Right? That's what a Brahmin would do. Comes into a confrontation. The Brahmin will think, what's the use of the confrontation? So he won't be engaged in the fight. Right? That makes sense. Something over his own facility, his own position, his own prestige, he's not going to worry about it. If it's a point of philosophy, that he'll argue. That he'll fight. But if it's a matter of his own facility, why should he fight for that? Right? That Kshatriyas do. Not that the Kshatriya is attached to the sense gratification or the position or that. It's because you require that to actually be a king. Right? The king doesn't have facility. You have more than him. Right? The king lives in a little hut down at the end of the road. Who's going to respect him that he's the king? Right? So therefore, he's got more money than you, a bigger house than you. He's got more, you know, vehicles. You know, he's got more assistants, more bureaucrats. He's got police forces. He has armies. Therefore, people respect him. If he didn't have that, who would care? Right? Isn't it? You know, you get the czar on his own. What do? They shoot him. Right? Right, you got Louis XVI on his own. What do? Cut off his head. So it's only because of the position and the facilities that he has, therefore he's respected. As soon as that's all taken away, who cares? Right? So, therefore, that's why the Kshatriya, he will fight. Otherwise, how does he do his duty? If he's planning to retire to the forest and take Vanaprastha, he doesn't care. They go away. They leave everything. So they have no problem. But that, if that's not what he's planning to do, which the Pandavas aren't now, they're grihasthas, they're going to perform their duty. They have to have that facility. Right? So that's the position. So, yes.
Those three higher orders, the Brahmin, the Kshatriya, Vaishya, they're said to be independent.
They're said to be independent.
So how is the Kshatriya independent when he's so dependent upon his facilities?
Independent means he can function on his own. So it means that the Kshatriya can generate his own facilities. Right? The Shudra can't. He needs others to support him to get his facilities. Right? The Brahmin starts off, so he goes to his teacher, he gets his knowledge, he can establish a school or whatever he wants. Like that, the Kshatriya then, by having the proper knowledge and understanding, then he can generate the, you know, those who will support him in this way, get his power base, and then be able to take his taxes and then, you know, solidify his power base. You know, the Vaishya can start off with, you know, 2 cents and end up with, you know, $1 billion. Right? But the Shudra, he's expressing his feelings, his emotions. In other words, he's trying to express the finer aspects of the mind, you know, of what things the mind can do, you know, expression of the emotions and senses through some kind of finer medium, you know, the elite call, the fine arts. So that's then what he does. So that requires facilitating that he doesn't create. He's an artist. He's not someone who builds a hall or creates the environment for. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, did Picasso ever sell one of his paintings for millions of dollars? No. Sotheby's sells them for millions of dollars. Because they have the stuff, they talk it up, they call all rich, rich people. There's no ordinary people there when they, you know, put that picture up. And so, therefore, amongst themselves, is one is that they want it, and two, then there's the prestige. Oh, this, all these different things, they know how to do it. And so, therefore, they get so much for that. You know what I'm saying? You know, all these people are glorified. I think it's Beethoven, you know, basically died with hardly anything. Mozart with even less. You know, I think one of Mozart, I'm not even sure which one it was, one of Mozart's works, one of his most famous works, was found by another man when he went to the meat shop and bought some meat. They wrapped up the meat in the papers of that music sheet that he had written, because it was there just sitting around the house, and after he died, they just took it and were using it like that. You know, and this is a guy when he was, I think, 5 years old, he was playing for the Queen of Spain. He was the official musician for the court. Right? But at the end of his life, you know, nothing. No one cared. So that's an artist. He's dependent. But a Vaishya, he takes, you know, anything and, you know, he comes back. You know what I'm saying? So you see that. You know, so it's like that. So they will create their environment. That's how you know who they are. Is that they can generate their environment. Does that make sense? Generate or, you know, work in line with others who are generating, but, you know, in whatever capacity they can. You know what I'm saying?
The shooter's always dependent.
Shooter's always dependent. Like that. Shooter's always dependent. If he does something seemingly independent, it's very small. In other words, what he can do himself. Like, let's say, he should be working for somebody, but if there's not an opportunity to do that, then he can work independently and create things that are useful for the Brahma, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. You know what I'm saying? He may have his own shop to make musical instruments, but he'll make them himself. You know, and his son may help and this and that. He may have a few assistants. But you'll see it's not a dynamic business. It'll just be one shop that they make good instruments, and they're famous and all that. And then if his son doesn't take it up, the shop disappears. You know what I'm saying? But if they're business people, they're working in musical instruments, then when this guy disappears, they'll find someone else. You know what I'm saying? This guy's son quits making musical instruments, he'll find somebody else who makes and bring him in. So the shop goes on. Does that make sense? Like that. This is the difference. It's subtle, but there's a difference. There's a difference. Is that okay? Yeah, so here is insignificant because of the lack of cooperation, the lack of commitment, right? In other words, the Pandava side, they're committed to what they're doing. They're cooperating together. Therefore, it is in, you know, what do you call it? What was it? Oh, the word you had to pass that. Immeasurable, right? But on the other, but the other way is insufficient, right? So it's immeasurable in that it's so great. The army is very vast. You have all these great personalities, but it's insignificant because it can't be applied. You know what I'm saying? So you may have so much great facility, but what will it do for you? You know, the man has billions of dollars. Will it save him from death? No. Therefore, the money is insignificant. Does that make sense? So that's the point that's coming out here. You know, and they do have Krishna on their side, so that's very significant. Okay? So verse 11. In verse 11, Duryodhana says, quote, all of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army, end quote. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Duryodhana meant that the success in the battle depends on Bhishma. In this way, Duryodhana simultaneously encouraged Bhishma and conveyed to Drona and all others that they must fight with full strength. Bhishma had to be protected because he was the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army, and his presence was of vital importance. Another reason was that Bhishma vowed not to fight with a woman. Since Shikhandi was considered a woman, the grandfather had to be protected from him. Like, because it was announced who would kill who, you know, at the gambling match. And so Shikhandi was announced that he would kill Bhishma. Right? You know, Bhima said he'll take care of the brothers, so you don't, no one else has to worry about the brothers. Like that. And that, because Shikhandi, we know the story. So Shikhandi, even though it was in a male form, it was only by the grace of the Yaksha, because he was actually born female. Like that. Lord Shiva said that Drupad would have a son, but a girl was born. So they took it, well, Shiva said it'll be a boy, so they dressed him as a boy, trained him as a boy, did everything as a boy. You know, so everything basically went fairly well until they married their, you know, quote-unquote son to a girl. And so the girl quickly found out that the son was not exactly as son as she would have liked the son to have been. And so then this would have created a battle between this princess's father and Drupad. But then, and then this Yaksha was very compassionate to Shikhandi and traded, you know, the rearrangement was just trading for, you know, the king was going to come himself, you know, because the daughter had said just to make sure. And if it was true, then it was war. So then the arrangement was is the Yaksha would trade his manliness with Shikhandi, you know, for that, you know, short time. And so then when everything worked out and that, and then they would trade back. But unfortunately, while that Yaksha was in the form of a woman, then the head of the Yakshas, Kuvera, came to visit him, you know, because they were good friends, and he was shy to come out and see him. So when finally he did encourage him to come out, then Kuvera was a little shocked at why you're getting involved in human affairs. We're Yakshas. We don't get involved. Humans are up to stupid stuff. We don't get involved. You know, so he told him that as long as Shikhandi is alive, his manliness will stay with him. And so then the Yaksha would have to remain as a woman. So then he establish the point that we don't get involved with these, you know, stupid human affairs. So Shikhandi, therefore, was male. But to Bhishma, then he's just seeing that this is Amba. You know, Amba's come in this form. And it wasn't that she was born male. Amba was born female, then converted to male. So then he's seeing, you know, these two aspects. And so he's not thinking. But Shikhandi is one of the Maharatis, you know. So he's not he's very expert in the battlefield. So he's something to be contended with. So they have to protect Bhishma Dev from him because he won't fight with him. Like that. Duryodhana declared that his life depends exclusively on Bhishma because he knew that the Kshatriyas feel proud and empowered when someone seeks their protection. Right? So he's using all these techniques. But he's not doing this out of Dharma, that Bhishma is the superior Kshatriya and he's the junior Kshatriya. Therefore, he's surrendering to his prowess. You know? And maintaining his independence there. No, he's doing this out of, this is niti. He's simply, because he knows Kshatriyas by nature are proud and that giving protection is the essential element of being a Kshatriya. So therefore, if he seeks his protection, then he will have to, you know, manifest that Kshatriya nature. Right? So he's not seeing it in that way. That's not the light he's seeing it in. He's seeing it in the light that he's trying to get his work done because he actually sees himself as superior. He's basically the emperor. and Bhishma is just someone who works for them. Because technically, Bhishma only by his vow is not the king. Right? Otherwise, Bhishma was the Yuvaraj. He would have been the king. And if he had been the king, then there wouldn't have been any of this stuff. Right? There wouldn't have been any need like that. There probably wouldn't have been the Pandavas. There wouldn't have been anyone. It just would have been Bhishma's there, and that's, you know, he would have been taking care of everything like that. You know, Duryodhana just would have been an unheard of name. Duryodhana praised Bhishma indirectly while talking to Drona because he knew that the indirect praise was more pleasant. Right? So this is also something to learn in it, in the Niti, just in the dealings, is that here is that what's an element means he's, in other words, you saw he's using elements of Dharma. Right, the nature of the Kshatriyas, the nature praise, all these things. But he's using them according to Niti. Right? He's not using the natural form. Right? So we see here is a very natural way. You're talking to one person, but you're praising another. Right? That indirect then comes out, it has a particular flavor to it. Like it says, it's more pleasant, it's more subtle. You know, it's kind of like someone revealing their mind rather than being directly saying. Right? Directly saying is nice, it's obvious and all that, but at the same time, these indirect also are very, it's more pleasant. The one's more formal, this is more pleasant. So he's being formal with Drona, but, you know, indirect here with Bhishma. And so then that will, he's trying to, you know, that is pleasant, so it's more endearing. So then, you know, Duryodhana's a nice guy, so Bhishma will work for him. Right? Does that make sense? So he's using all these tricks. Verses 12 to 20, signs of victory. Prabhupada comments in verse 12. The grandsire of the Kuru dynasty could understand the inner meaning of the heart of the grandson, his grandson Duryodhana. And out of his natural compassion for him, he tried to cheer him by blowing his conch shell very loudly, befitting his position as a lion. Indirectly, by the symbolism of the conch shell, he informed his depressed grandson Duryodhana that he had no chance of victory in the battle, because the Supreme Lord Krishna was on the other side. But still, it was his duty to conduct the fight, and no pains would be spared in that connection. Right? So Duryodhana is worried that Bhishma is not going to fight so wholeheartedly because of the Pandavas and Krishna and everything like that. But so he's trying to encourage him in this and that. But if you actually look at this, technically it's insulting. Because then he's saying that Bhishma is not actually that much of a Kshatriya. Because a Kshatriya doesn't matter what it is, it's his duty to fight. He fights wholeheartedly, no matter what the cause. Right? He may not fight with anger, but he will do his best, you know, at the position at the time. Right? You know, but Duryodhana is worried that the others are going to be fighting with anger. And so, therefore, they're going to be in a more powerful position. But this element that they're not going to commit, they're not this and that, it's actually insulting. You know, it's just like we see in so many modern philosophies and religions that God is there, he's the supreme controller, but at the same time, you know, he's not a person, he doesn't have anything to do with anything else, the material nature is the source of life and the source of everything. You know, then it kind of gets insulting. You know, it's the same kind of thing. So it appears that you're dealing nice and that, but actually, he's only doing all this for his own purpose. He doesn't actually... If it wasn't for this battle or anything else, then Bhishma is a problem. He's always telling him that he's wrong. He's always supporting his enemies. But he knows, on the one side, as a Kshatriya, he will fight for him. But at the same time, he's thinking that he's not going to be committed. Right? So it's a whole mishmash of stupidity. So then here... To show means because you blow the conch shell, that's, you know, they blow the conch shell before the fight and all that. So he's blowing the conch shell, but Duryodhana said all these things, he blows the conch shell. The conch shell is you know, represents Vishnu, you know, here, you know, because Shankha Chakra got a Padma. And so his, the Shankha, you know, that is victory. But the point is he's showing it through that, which is something they do before the battle. They blow the conch shell. But what he's actually subtly showing is that victory belongs to Vasudev. Right? Like that. But he does it in such a way that Duryodhana will be encouraged, because it's his duty. As a Kshatriya, he's supposed to encourage and everything like that. So in that way, he'll be encouraged, because he'll take the external. Okay, he's ready for fighting. Because you only blow your conch before you fight. So he blows the conch, that means now they're ready for fighting. Like that. Plus at the same time, I think he very efficiently shuts Duryodhana up, because it's very hard to talk when someone like Bhishma is blowing his conch shell. Right? When Lord Krishna and Arjuna blew their divine conch shells, the sound shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Okay. Here in the note, the Sagosha Dhritarashtranam Hridayanti Viradayata. That sound shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Says Dhrita. Dhrita means captured, and Rashtra means land. The statement can be translated also as shattered the hearts of those who usurped the kingdom. Right? That's from Acharya. Yeah, this is Acharya. They can see so many things in there. Like that, is that it's. But it's not speculative. You know, they know the Sanskrit, they know the grammar, and they use it so nicely. So we can understand is this is not gyan. Gyan is where it's applied other than for Krishna. There's another purpose to it. You know, your own taste, your own purpose. But when Krishna is the goal, then knowledge is natural. Krishna is knowledge. Right? So to avoid knowledge because it's you know, somehow or another, not Krishna. It's not, what do you call it? Not devotional. But the point is knowledge is Krishna. So in this, they can bring out all these very fine, fine points that otherwise would not be seen. Like that. So, and then from this, they can establish, one, they can bring out the relationships and rasa and all that. At the same time, they can very finely present the philosophy and defeat any other philosophy. So this is important. Arjuna had Hanuman on his flag, a chariot given by Agni, and above all, Lord Krishna, who is the master of the senses and the husband of the goddess of fortune, was personally present to guide him in such auspicious conditions arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee, lay the signs of assured victory. Although Krishna promised not to fight, he nevertheless accepted the Kaurava's challenge and blew his conch. The transcendental sound cheered the Pandava's army and shocked the sons of Dhritarashtra. In the Bhagavad Gita 11:36, we find another example how the presence of the Lord invokes opposite reactions. Arjuna said, "O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done." The demons cannot tolerate the presence of the Lord. The same truth applies on the adhyatmic level, where the holy name of Lord Krishna drives away the demon-like material desires from the devotee's heart. Right, so it's the, yeah, so adhyatmic means our own mind, our own sense of that giving us problem. So then on this platform is by hearing the Lord's name, by hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then it drives away the demoniac nature. Right? Because one has to remember that demoniac nature is what keeps us in the material world. Right? It means the divine means surrender to God, demoniac means what's not surrendered to God. So therefore, since the intent is to surrender to God, that is what's taken, right? That's the meaning of that. Abhichet Sudaracharo, that one is saintly because his intention is God consciousness. Doesn't matter what's there from the past. Doesn't matter what remnants are even manifesting now. The actual intent is God consciousness. So that's the principle. So the demoniac elements are ignored from the point of their position. they're only attended to in the way of that they may get in the way of devotional service, so therefore you work with them. But the most important thing in working with them is chanting the holy name, hearing the Bhagavad philosophy. Right? That is what's going to remove it the most. Other things don't work. Like we've seen, it's been pointed out, Sixth Canto points out, prayaschitta doesn't do diddly. Right? You know, only fools actually require it. The mundaners require prayaschitta. You understand? They think that actually does something. Right? What prayaschitta does is that the person who is going through it then is able to appreciate that doing something not according to the rules is trouble. Therefore, don't do things that create trouble. But the idea that you'll actually become purified by it, that doesn't work. You know? It doesn't work. It means we're always looking for that. Get out of it. You know, what can I do to get away from it? No, but that's not going to do that. It changes the mentality. That's the whole point. That's why in this society of Brahmins, prayaschitta isn't a major thing. You know, or if there is any element of it, they're the only ones that are let to you know, by contemplation, by understanding. Because by making a determination that I'm not going to do this anymore, that is purifying. Right? And then by following that, then there's even more purification. But just by that determination, one's already purified. Right? One doesn't even have to go through the prayaschitta. So therefore, the prayaschitta is for those with a mundane sense of morality that think that something has to be done because this is actually just. They did this, therefore they get that. Does that make sense? Because we have to remember, where is justice in the levels of consciousness? Right? It's not on the platform of religion. It's not on the platform of moksha. It's on the platform of artha. Because one has to remember, without justice, how are you going to keep your money? So therefore, for economic reasons, you require justice. You don't require it for dharma, you don't require it for moksha. Right? And definitely mundane justice, what's that going to do for bhakti? You understand? But justice is there because otherwise people will think that if someone does something irreligious, he should get a bad reaction. Right? Because irreligion gives bad results. Religion gets good results. So if somebody does something that's irreligious and gets a good result, therefore he must be punished because irreligion should get a bad result. Does that make sense? They will be punished in the future because by karma that bad result will come. But the point is we may not be satisfied thinking, okay, next lifetime he'll get it. We want to see it yesterday. Right? And so therefore it is established. You understand? But the only benefit is that they change the mentality. So as soon as they change the mentality, the benefit is done. So that can be done in a moment. But for those who are mundane, they must see something. So therefore, time-bound prayaschittas must be established. Does that make sense? But in the Vedic, the maximum thing that can be established, you know, by time is 12 years. Anything beyond 12 years is not within the Vedic tradition. Does that make sense? You know, of course, capital punishment. Oh, no, it's actually quite short. Because, you know, you have a new body within, you know, a few months. But the point is that it's 12 years. It's one cycle of Jupiter, right? Because he is the guru. He is the judge, you know, like that. So it's one cycle of Jupiter. And after that one cycle of Jupiter, then that prayaschitta and that sin is never to be mentioned again. Anyone who mentions it is sinful. Right, so this idea of lifetime, you know, how you say, original sin, eternally damned, all these different things, this isn't Vedic in any way, shape, or form. Like that. It just makes people feel good. You get up and the bile gets moving and you yell and scream and all this kind of stuff like that. And, No, it's just because there's a bunch of rice over here from the yagyas, so then they sit there. But we moved our hand, and so it got scared. Okay. The Pandavas blew their conch shells immediately after Krishna sounded Panchajanya. This signifies they were Lord's dependent followers and acted on his behalf. On the other side, the Kauravas acted independently, pursuing their own selfish desires. This erroneous mentality was the ultimate reason for their defeat, as is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 18:58. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. Right, so if you become consciousness of me, you will pass over the obstacles of conditioned life by Krishna's grace. So by becoming conscious of Krishna, that is what's going to make, that's what's going to get us through material life. It's not actually some external form. The external is there because there's supposed to be subtler forms, right? Right, in the law of causation, means you're going to have the operative cause, which you're dealing with the material cause. You are operating the material energy. But that's only half of the equation. The other half is the subtleties of the material creation on which your actions and the reaction of or response of material nature is based. And then the Supreme Lord, who is the source of those metaphysical elements. So that means, if you actually want to understand how anything works in this world, you have to be conscious of God and His potencies and how they function. You're not. You're actually in illusion because you think you're operating this and it's work. Therefore, you're getting result. But it's no. You're operating, getting the result according to God's plan. God has already said, "You do this, you get this result." You're thinking, "No, I do this, I get the result." But we're not the cause of that result. It's already, the material nature is presenting that based on the formal cause that is, you know, the universal form. The primary creation has already established what things get what result. Right? And that potency for that to happen is coming from Krishna. Does that make sense? So this law of causation then establishes that if you become conscious of Krishna, then whatever work you're doing, you'll become God conscious by Krishna's grace, right? Because the first stage is becoming conscious. Then we're trying to make that consciousness favorable, right? Then we're trying to bring that to the point of devotion. So we have to remember is that if we're looking at the details of it, just being conscious is only the first step. Right? The first step is the consciousness. To get to there, then we establish the form. Because we're not conscious of anything. So therefore, at least we perform the form in connection with Krishna consciousness. It's so perfect, bhakti. You're purified. When you're purified, then knowledge and detachment are there. When knowledge and detachment are there, it's more easy to be conscious. Right? Otherwise, then we're only conscious because of our own attachment. So we may be able to become conscious of the activity that we're doing. So the more attached we are, the more focused we are. Right? That's why, you know, certain schools of success, then they'll push the attachment aspect. Because the more attached you are, then the more you're going to be focused when you perform the Abhideya. Right? Well, does that make sense? Like that. So, or you have those schools that are more mechanical, then they will give you more clarity on the field of activities to create that. Just something to say?
Yeah, just when you finish.
Oh, it's already time to finish. Okay. Okay, so in other words, the external is performed to purify us so that we become conscious. It's not that the external form is important on its own. The rules and regulations aren't important on their own other than they help establish Krishna consciousness. But Krishna is established through operating the form. Right? Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean that there should be no form. But it definitely doesn't mean that the form is all in all. Does this make sense? Right. So becoming conscious, then Krishna says you'll pass over all obstacles. So if you have any obstacles, you want to know how to get over them, Krishna said right here, be conscious of Krishna. Then you'll pass all over everything by Krishna's grace.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.